Well, thank you for tuning in to yet another episode of I'm Here For The Podcast. We'd like to begin our show with a thought for the day. Embrace the small moments, for they are the building blocks of every great achievement. With that being said, I'm your sister, Fran Torrey.
And I'm your girl, Trina. And we appreciate your time and viewership. When you have thousands of podcasting options, you chose us. And guess what? We choose you. Woo! Cousin, can you believe we are at episode 15 of season one?
Yes, this is our last episode of the season. We've learned so much from podcasting, and you know what? I cannot wait to next season. Listeners, we are going to be a lot better, a lot more prepared. We've learned so much through this process. We've gained some viewerships, and we thank you all for tuning in to our episodes. We really love the listeners. We thank you all for the listener letters, and yes, Hopefully next season we will just make it a little bit better for you.
Absolutely. Like Tori said, we've learned so much, from having the correct tones to facial expressions to just reaching out to our listeners, them reaching back out to us, how to correspond with you guys. It's so much stuff that comes along with hosting and having a podcast that goes on behind the scenes that you guys have no idea of. But now that we've had the opportunity to go through the process, season two is going to be awesome and amazing. Let me just tell you, it's going to be packed full of information. We're going to get some great guests in here again, like we just did with this season. And I'm just excited, just to be better when we come back. We're going to enjoy our family for the season, the summer, travel a little bit, and just, you know, of course, stay working on perfecting I'm Here For The Podcast. So we thank you in advance for still tuning in, as we will be posting things on social media to engage you guys, because we do not want to lose you as our listeners or our viewers. So thanks for sticking in with us and riding out this whole first season with us, T. With that being said, do you have any memorable moments or anything from first season that you could think of right now?
Yes, some of the memorable moments was, what's your friend, Roggy? Roggy helped me to realize that people that are incarcerated do need our help. And I am looking for people in the area that I can donate to. I still need to, Roggy, I haven't forgot about you. I'm going to still send those prayer books out to the people that she helps out in California to get their prayer journals and prayer books. But that Roggy really touched me, and she made me want to give back to the community. So,
yeah. Absolutely. And I think I'm with you on that now. When it comes to the men that we had join us with our cousin Dre and AJ, now they had me cracking up. Like, I could not stop laughing from either one of them. But at the same time, we learned something from both of those men. Like Andre, he shared his experiences with us. And we definitely learned some things. AJ, in regards to his parenting skills and, you know, discussing our topics and, you know, giving his opinion, just helped me to get the male's perspective on those subjects and categories. So, I mean, it's just been a great first ride. We started with three, ended up with two. You know, I hate that our sister Tia is no longer with us, but she's on and off to better things, and we definitely appreciate her contributions to the first few episodes. It was a great ride, but now it's just me and you, cuz
we got this. You know what? And then even with Tia leaving the show, we do love her, and we'll probably bring her back one day so you see what she is doing and everything. But it did help us to realize that we can do this on our own as well, because Tia has such a powerful voice, and she's always been an excellent speaker and things of that nature, which to me kind of made me take a step back, like, oh, well, Tia can do most of the talking and I'll just sit here and just jump in every once in a while. But with Tia being gone, it's like I had to get my voice and get out here and do the things that I'm fearful of. I know I'm not alone in this, but, you know, public speaking is, it can be fearful. But, you know, now with it being us two, it's making me come to the forefront and do the things that I need to do in order to be successful in life, is getting in front of the camera, doing the public speaking and things of that nature. So, yeah. So now, I mean, hey, I'm conquering my fears. And hey, if there's any listeners out there who want to join us, conquer your fears, come out here in season two. Yeah, go to our email at questions@imhereforit.com. If you have a story that you want to share, come online and just, as we say, sit on the couch with us and tell your story to the listeners out there. I'm sure, you know, you would be helping someone from getting online with us.
Great suggestion. And also, any experts out there, if you have an expertise in area of relationships, finances, anything that could be educational to our listeners, please drop us an email in at info@imhereforit.com. We'd love to sit down and talk with you. Beauty experts, health and sports fitness or experts, whatever your expertise is, drop us an email and maybe we can sit down and, you know, collaborate, have you come onto the show and share your experience with our listeners. So we are open and ready for season two. And yeah, we'd love to sit down and talk to you guys. So come on aboard. Yes. Yeah, so we initially planned to go live for our final episode of season one, but due to technical difficulties, we are, you know, going to go ahead and pre-record this. And please make sure that you still throw out your comments, because like I said, we're going to continue. Although we're going to end our season one, we're going to still continue to communicate with all of our listeners via social media. So any questions or concerns, or if you want to drop comments in regards to this episode or our previous episodes, don't hesitate to do so. We will still be following up with everyone and we are ready to discuss it all.
Okay? Absolutely.
Awesome. Awesome. So we usually get started with a segment called Come and Talk to T, where I give my opinion in regards to hot topics or current events and things of that nature. But today we're going to do it a little bit different. We're not going to necessarily do a full segment of Come and Talk to T, but I did want to follow up with our listeners in regards to attorney Marilyn Mosby. We've been pushing for the past, I think, maybe 2 weeks, we've been pushing the petition that we were asking our listeners to sign on behalf of Attorney Mosby. Excuse me, just a little background about the whole entire case in case you haven't had the chance to see our recordings. But she was being accused of mortgage fraud illegally pulling money out of her retirement fund. She was facing up to 40 years in prison, federal prison, you guys. So the petition was regarding trying to get President Joe Biden to pardon Attorney Mosby. We did our due diligence, pushed out to our listeners, requested everybody to sign. Those of you that did sign the petition, we thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much on behalf of Attorney Mosby. If you didn't have an opportunity to sign it, if you shared the story, whatever you did to help her, we appreciate it, because us as African-American women never know when the shoe may be on the other foot and we may have to rely on strangers to help determine our future. So if that is ever the case, and, you know, if it's something that we believe in, we should definitely support one another, right? She did have her trial. Well, she was already found guilty and she had her sentencing hearing on the 23rd of May. Again, she was facing up to 40 years in federal prison, but to God be the glory, right? We prayed for her. We signed everything that we possibly could. And she ended up walking away with 12 months of probation, 12 months of confinement. Let me read it just to make sure that I have it all straight here. She ended up getting 12 months of home confinement, so I was correct, with the electronic monitoring in order to forfeit 90% of her property value. So let me give you a little breakdown of basically what that means. She was the 12 months of home confinement as part of her 36 months of supervised release for making false mortgage applications and two counts of perjury. During the first 12 months of her supervised release, the judge on the case ordered Mosby to also remain at on home confinement with an electronic monitoring device. This judge also further ordered her to forfeit 90% of the property purchased with a fraudulently obtained mortgage, including any appreciation. So, I know that her attorney, Angela Rye, is still working on this whole entire situation for her, although she didn't receive any jail time. So praise God for that. She has two young daughters. They need their mother with them. We were thankful that she didn't get any jail time. But I do believe that they are still seeking to fight the 90% of the mortgage being forfeited, in addition to another fine that I'm not going to say because I don't know the correct verbiage right now, but you can definitely read up on it by Googling attorney Marilyn Mosby's on Google, and they will break down everything in detail that they're still continuing to fight for. So again, we just wanted to bring you an update. She did not receive any jail time. We are so thankful for that, but she did receive those, you know, that home confinement with that monitoring bracelet and having to forfeit 90% of that property's value. So, hey, it's power in numbers. When we come together, I don't know how many of our listeners actually signed off on the petition, but I know when we initially looked at it, we were at about 40,000. The day before the actual hearing, she was near 70,000 people signing that petition. So, power in numbers, guys, and you just never know when you may rely on a stranger to help determine your future. So thank you so much for everything that you guys have done. We appreciate it.
Yeah. To God be the glory for that situation.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So yeah, we're going to just keep this thing on rolling. We usually have our segment of Behind the Makeup. And again, because this is our last episode, we're doing things a little bit differently. So we're going to bring Tori in with a topic that's going to blow your socks off. Because when I first saw it, when it was brought to me, I was like, wow. This is going to be very interesting, and we're really interested in knowing what you guys think. So please don't forget to comment on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, and all of our socials. We want to know your thoughts. So T, what you got up for us?
Yes. So today with Behind the Makeup, we are talking about sons being husbands to their moms. So this topic is going to be a little bit different, might be a little controversial. We just want to say we're not therapists, we're not doctors. We are just giving our opinion. And on this one, listeners, like Trina said, please give your opinion. And with that, Trina, do you have a video that you want to share?
Absolutely, you guys. We want to give you some insight of what prompted us to actually do this segment today. And you guys, this young lady, I've never heard of her or anything that she's been attached to in the past. So we wanted to actually just, you know, share everything with you guys. And again, get your input. So let's see, let's bring it on up here. Okay. Now, let me know when you can see it up, T, and I'll go ahead and get it started.
I can see it.
Okay, let's go ahead and get it started and put on your good listening ears now.
Yeah. Yeah, son husbands. If you've never heard the term before, you have to understand where it's coming from. And it triggered my interest because of this one video I saw this morning. Let's get into it.
Mothers oftentimes do everything but their sons, and they have that emotional stability that is built within the home. A single mother is a fuckboy factory. Single women become so emotionally dependent upon their children, specifically their sons, that they will convince themselves that they don't need a man until they encounter the space from being alone to genuinely being lonely. And now we're having to deal with the imbalance that was set in the household, because this boy is not your son. He is your man. When you want to cuddle, you go lay down with them. When you want some emotional time, you go watch movies with them. You touch them and you rub them and you massage them. You do these things, everything that you would do to a man to suffice that. A lot of women even dress their sons like the man that broke their heart.
This is tough.
So I think that's the dichotomy. Like, I'm not saying that your children shouldn't have weight in your relationship. Right. But what I am saying that we have to look at it from an integral space. Like, why do they feel this way? Especially if you're dealing with a man child who is uncomfortable with your new partner. And this man child is not necessarily a little boy anymore.
So. Well, no, that leaves me speechless. It's, wow, yeah. I don't know where to, do you want to start with this, Trina?
Okay, so when this was first brought to me, I was like, damn, just straight up, damn. Okay, I'm a boy mom. And my boys are 9 years apart, okay? So for 9 years, my oldest son was an only child. I grew up as an only child to a single mother. My single mother raised a daughter, and she showed me what love was. She poured into me for basically everything that she went through was a test for her to make it better for me, right? So I adopted that exact same mentality. I had my first child. It was a boy. And when I tell you, I just loved him. I poured into him all of this love. I was that mother that would hold him and just kiss all on him, coddle him. But then I had the husband that said, "What are you doing?" I have a husband who has like 9 siblings, so he comes from a big family. He's one of the older siblings, so he's helped to raise some of these children. When he was telling me that I was spoiling this soon-to-be man, I looked at him as if he were being mean. You know, like, I didn't realize, because me, I, being raised by a single mom, I didn't have a father. So I never saw the father pouring in love. I just saw my mom. So I can only duplicate what I saw, right? So me hugging on him, loving on him, probably sheltering him too much. Well, my husband would be like, "Man, let him go. Let him do his thing." No, I don't know who's over there. I don't know what's going on over there. So I put my fears in him. When I had this man telling me, "You are creating a monster. You know, you're creating a spoiled young man that's not going to be good to any woman," right? So everything that I would try to do, his dad would show him the exact opposite, right? So I kind of had the balance. I didn't necessarily give him all of me because I wasn't a single mom. So he got to see this part, you know, the love and nurturing of the mom, probably being overbearing. And then he got the dad, "Get your ass out there and be a boy. Smack him around, what, go play that football, trip him up, whatever the case may be." He had that man to show him, everything that your mama is showing you is all fine and dandy, but at the same time, that's not the characteristics of what a man should have. So when I had my second son 9 years after the fact, I was able to see the difference, right? So I said, okay, this one all you. I ain't saying nothing. Not that I didn't love him. I hugged him. I kissed him. I did the exact same thing. But I think I was able to see what my husband was initially trying to teach me on the first child and just let it go. Now, the second one, independent, don't need us for anything. He will go and try to figure it out. Let me take that back. He need us for money and food, that kind of stuff. Because, you know, that's he in college, so he always broke and hungry. So he do need us for that. But he's independent thinker. He's going to try to problem solve. He's going to try to figure everything out. He's to the point to where I'm like, dang, he went away to school and he just really didn't need us other than for money and, you know, so that kind of thing. But other than that, he talked to the counselors, got his classes, getting help if he needed, joined a fraternity, creating his own family. I mean, he's just like super independent. So I can see what the young lady is saying because I actually had both aspects. I had the one who I spoiled rotten, and then we had the other one that was just like 100% raised his dad's way and he is just like totally independent. You know, so I see what the lady is saying, but she kind of throws me for a loop too, T, because she says women that hug or kiss on their sons or want to cuddle with them. Well, neither one of my boys live with me. I got one that's in Cali. I'm in Texas. Mm-hmm. Then I got another one that goes away to school. So he's only home for a few months. For Mother's Day, I had them both. And you're dang on right. I was like, come and get in the bed with me, y'all. Let me just hug on y'all. Let me just enjoy and embrace this moment because I don't get it often. You know what I mean? Kissed them, you know what I mean? Hugged them, rubbed on their backs. I even massage them, put some oil on my hands, massage them up and everything. So is that what she's referring to? Or am I just showing my boys that I actually love them and I'm nurturing them and that I'm giving them what they should probably, some characteristics of what they should look for in the women that they're dating, right? They're going to want to be loved. They're going to want to be emotionally supported. They're going to want to be touched and hugged on. So am I showing them that or am I messing them up? So when I heard her video, I was like, wow. But then it kind of confused me too, because which one am I? I wasn't the single parent, but I still did show the love and affection and attention. I definitely didn't raise no fuck boys. So I know that ain't it. So is there a balance? Is there an in-between? Is there a happy medium? I don't know. I'm still trying to figure that out after watching that video.
You know what? This one is hard for me to respond to because I'm a girl mom, you know, and I do believe that you do need the two parent household to have the balance, because on the flip side of that, I've seen, you know, where I've heard, I don't want to call anybody out, but friends say that, oh my gosh, their mom messed this man up because he thinks that a woman is supposed to cook for him all the time and he's supposed to have this, that, and the other. And he don't want to do anything, you know, but have somebody sit around and take care of him. So I'm thinking that might make you a F-boy where, you know, I think girls are raised a little bit hard. We raise girls a little bit harder. Think about it. You know, your mom loved on you, but you had to know how to cook. You had to be more independent. You had to get out there and figure it out. You know, even like, I'm not, Trina, this is no shade to you because I think you are a good mom. You know, Tia, my oldest daughter was down at Trina's house for Mayor's graduation, and she is right. Her child is very independent. So he don't seem like he needs Trina or her husband for anything. He's just out there. He's actually doing exceptionally well. So for whatever reason, I think you did a good job with both of them. They're both doing well. But let me go somewhere with this story. Please. Trina Trina, she's a good mom. She cooks all the time and things of that nature for her boys. Like her son was, I think it was graduation. And she's like, oh, I got to get home. I think something was going on in the store and it was taking me a little bit longer to leave the store. She's like, I got to go home and cook for my son, you know, because he has to get out right before graduation. And she wanted to make sure that he was fed. Well, with a girl, as a girl mom, it would have been like, I love my kids. You know, I do. But it's like, girl, it's a sandwich in there. You better get on in there and cook your food. But with boys, I noticed it's not just you. With boys, it does seem like the mother, and I'm just looking at countless other friends of mine that I could call out. They make sure that their sons have home cooked meals and everything. But with girls, I don't know that we cater to them like that. We teach our girls to be more independent, where mm-hmm. it might be we probably should be softer with our girls, because other cultures would do the opposite, where they treat the women more softer, more female. You know, they get to stay at home and be coddled a little bit more. We don't coddle girls enough. And I think we coddle boys a little bit too much. But on the other hand, I don't know, do your boys cook? Because every man that I've had in my life, including my father, my ex-husband, the guy that I'm dating now they all cook too. We're, you know, so it's still a balance, you know, with however you were raised. Yeah, you know, but it's just like, do they know how to cook? Because men do know how to cook.
So, and this is the thing. So Mayor, he never cooks at home, but he was just out on a trip with his frat brothers and they all pitched in and cooked. And he sent me a picture like, Mama, look what I cooked. It was some waffles and some eggs. I was like, you go. Cause he ain't never even cooked that at home. Mario. Yeah. You know, he's been living on his own for quite some time. So yeah, he's kind of figured it out, but you're right. Like, even getting on the podcast today, I was dang near late because my baby went to work out and he came back and was like, Mom, I'm hungry. Could you make me a breakfast sandwich? And I'm like, okay, yeah. I didn't even get to do my hair because I'm trying to rush and make some breakfast and get on. I'm like, okay, I'll just put a hat on. Let me just put a hat on today. I won't even do my hair. But I took care of him. So I don't know what it is, but with my boys, look, you know, they all, this one like this, and then you still got the husband who like this. Sometimes I find myself cooking three different versions of the same meal because this one don't like this one don't like that, and this one wanted this way, you know? But my husband would be like, what are you doing? Just cook one meal. Either they eat it or they don't. But I wouldn't just cook him anything. You know what I mean? So I get it. It's like, you want to make sure that everybody's good. I don't even know if I would probably do that the same way thing if I had a daughter, or probably not. I'd probably be like, girl, get in here and help me clean or cook for.
Exactly. That's how we do daughters. I'm sorry, but go ahead.
Yeah, no. So that's what I'm thinking. I'm wondering if I would probably, you know, have her pitching in to help me so that she could probably end up mimicking what I do in her relationships. And in our actuality, is that a good thing? Or, you know,
no, it's not, because we teach the girls to be so independent. Mm-hmm. And then when it comes to that, you could teach the girls to be too independent, because like, even with my oldest daughter, she has a hard time receiving help from a man because I think I've raised her to be too independent. And right. It's like, girl, and then I told her in her relationship, oh, we don't coddle no man. You know, you can cook for him and everything. She does cook for him, but it's like, no, if you coddle a man, they're going to eventually go find a woman that men want to save women in their mind, in their subconscious. They really do. They want to be the head. So if you're coddling them and you're taking care of everything for them, eventually they're going to feel like less than a man, and they're going to go looking for that one woman that's looking at them like, oh, you know, you're so wonderful. Thank you for helping me change the light bulb. You know, men like to feel needed. And if you're doing everything, if you're doing everything for them, they don't get that sense of feeling needed. You know, they need that fulfillment at the end of the day. So
yeah.
I don't know if you're messing them up, because it all depends on the person. I believe that, you know, your youngest child, he's not going to be messed up behind the love that you gave him, because he's such an independent thinker. He's probably going to be so logical, and some woman will be able to tell him, like, look, I'm not getting ready to make a separate meal. You're going to eat this meal that I cooked, and it's going to be fine. And guess what? Some days you cook better than me, honey. You're going to have to cook, and he's going to be fine. I think he'll be fine, but mm-hmm. I do kind of agree with the lady that you could be messing some men up, because I got a friend. Her husband is an excellent cook, but he came into the relationship because he had been coddled, and his woman cook. He never had to cook, never had to clean, didn't have to do anything. And she's like, oh no, this isn't working. This isn't going to work for me. And at first he wanted a woman that was going to do everything for him. And it's just like times have changed. So if you are, I don't know, teaching your man that I'm just going to cook for you all the time, with the way women get out here and work, it's a team effort.
Absolutely. Because
that way of thinking, Trina, to me is so old school, outdated. You know, nowadays, women have to get up and work 2 and 3, 4 jobs, side hustles and everything else. Yeah, should a woman cook for your man? Absolutely. But it is good when he can cook every once in a while, clean up every once in a while, and know how to be self-sufficient as well. So
absolutely,
that's my take on it. Long as cook, go ahead.
Then yeah, exactly. Long as he can cook, and I think that they got the perfect balance, because I wasn't a single mom, they had their dad in the house who did cook, who cleaned, who wash clothes. Like my husband don't even want me to wash his clothes. Like, he like, I'm good. Like, I'm like, I don't need to. It's cool. But he's always been the one that washed their clothes and prepared them for all their sporting activities and all that kind of stuff. So he pretty much took care of that. So they did get the opportunity to see dad still doing some of that stuff too. So they know it's a thing, you know, boys, you taking out that trash. If you on a date with a woman, you walk on the outside of her while they're on the inside. You open her door for her. You know, so things like that that they saw their dad do for me, in turn, is what they do. You know, so I know that they'll be okay. But I was, especially with my oldest one, I didn't know. It was the first time. I never had a child. I was the only child. I never even babysit kids. To be honest, I thought I was going to be one of those ladies that didn't even have kids. You know what I mean? And I would have probably been cool with that, just traveling around doing my thing. But when God blessed me with them, you know, I moved forward with what I knew, and I just knew to pour love into them. So I did have the opportunity of seeing a mom, and I'm not going to call nobody out, who was straight up trifling mama, straight up trifling to all our kids. And I was wondering, like, how could you bring these people into the world and then not pour into them and make them pretty much care for each other? You know what I mean? Straight trifling. Okay. But then her kids are forced to figure it out. Right. Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping that they'll all turn out to be great people. I know her oldest is you know, moving in the right direction, but it's just like, I never wanted to be the trifling mama, but at the same time, not doing everything for them doesn't make you trifling. It's actually preparing them for life, right? Preparing them for life lessons. Like, say, for example, it's a refrigerator full of food in there. Why are you waiting for me to cook? Or my kids are so cold, I would cook. And if I didn't make their plate, they wouldn't eat. Mama, can you please can you just make me a plate, mama? It's just different when you make it, girl. And I believe that dumb shit and would do it for them. Mama, it's just different. But they wouldn't eat. If I didn't make the plate, they wouldn't eat. And my mom used to be like, oh, well, They should just be hungry then, because you cooked it. You ain't no damn maid. Make them. But I would just do it. I would just do it. And I just, again, being the only child, all I knew to do was just pour love. And that's my way of loving. You know what I mean? So this is a good topic. I would love to get some feedback from some of the single boy moms as well as the married ones. Just how do you guys feel about this? What's your opinions? What's your thoughts? Please send us an email at info@imhereforit.com, or let us know what you guys think on our social medias. We would love to hear from you.
Yeah. Well, Trina, I think overall, you know, there's no handbook when it comes to parenting, and there's no handbook to being a wife. When I was a wife, I used to fix my ex-husband's plate, because that's what we saw back in the day, too. And he wouldn't eat if I didn't fix his plate as well. And that's just what we did. But it's just like times have changed so much, and some things just have to change with the times just because of the wives. But I think what you did was you gave them the right amount of love, and your husband gave them the right amount of independence, because your boys are actually doing it. And, you know, even your oldest son, who might have been spoiled, he's in a great relationship now. So I think that in your case, it was a happy balance. But as your cousin, girl, as much food as you cook for them, she will cook Sunday dinners all throughout the week. They can get their own plate, in my opinion. And I love my cousins, but
breakfast, all right. And dinner. And I'm like, now they gone. I'm like, I don't even cook. I'll be like, babe, you on your own. He'll cook summer, whatever. But now that our baby boy on for the summer, I'm cooking. We're both trying to make sure that he's good or whatever. And he don't even be here. He's gone. And we still trying to cook. And I'm like, come on, man.
Girl, he'll be fine. But also, I would say this, to make sure that you are making, he doesn't have unrealistic expectations of what a woman should be, because men do look to their wives to be like their mothers. Yes. But I would have a conversation with him like, look, son, the way women are working nowadays, they're not going to do all this for you. You're going to have to pitch in and help. And with that, he's such a logical thinker. I think he's going to get it or whatever. We just don't want to send him out there with no unrealistic expectations, because, honey, there's not a lot of women out there like you anymore, you know. With girl, I'm like, my kids are looking at Trina like, they're like, oh, cousin Trina is super mom. She over there for them, making their sandwiches and stuff. She was like, you would have never. I said, I did back in the day, but back when they don't remember, you know. But yeah, it's been a long time. I put that down a long time ago. But
I get it. Mm-hmm. The words right out of my mouth, cuz to each his own, you know. But yeah, that was a good topic. Please comment. Let us know what you guys think.
I think we comments on this topic, because this is a good one. Go ahead.
Absolutely. I'm thinking maybe in season 2, maybe we can revisit this topic and bring some men on to get their opinions.
That would be a good one, because that's what we need in a situation like this, so we can get some, I know men have probably dealt with other single moms that were raising their sons and were really coddling them, and we can get their opinions on how they handle that. What do you do in a situation like
that? Yes. Just their perspective is always something that we can use to balance it all out for our listeners. So yeah, that'll be great to revisit season 2. Mm-hmm. All right, so we're just going to keep this thing moving. And last but not least, we're going to go on into our main topic. Now, we've been wanting to discuss this for quite some time. And what better show than the last show of the season? We're going to discuss manifestation. What does that mean to you? What does manifestation mean to you? I've always wondered if there was a difference between manifesting and lying. Is there really? The word says we speak things into existence, right? So if I tell you that I'm a millionaire today, but somebody looked at my Chase account and you found out otherwise, am I lying or am I speaking it into existence? What's the difference? How does that work? If I say I got a mansion with a 5-car garage and all the cars is in the garage and they post it up right now, right? But then you come into my house, you be like, girl, that ain't, you cool, but that ain't what you said you had, right? So am I lying or am I manifesting? Because again, I'm trying to speak it into existence. So cousin, I know this is more of, what's your thoughts when it comes to manifestation in general, and then manifestation versus lying? How does that work?
Okay, I'm going to say manifestation is real. You know, we are both spiritual people, and we know, we raise our children to speak life. You know, you need to speak things that are not as though they were. But you also have to be careful who you are speaking things in front of, you know. And when it comes to manifestation, if you don't know what manifestation is, it's like it's a form of visualization, a form of goal setting, having a positive mindset, you know. Like, for instance, you know, a lot of times negative thoughts come into your mind. You want to go inside yourself and rebuke those negative thoughts out of your mind. You could say, I'm just giving an example of, instead of saying, I'm feeling sick today, you're telling yourself on the inside, like, no, I'm healthy. You know, and you speak some scriptures to yourself, you know, God has, by Jesus stripes, I am healed. But when you're going out in the public and everything, you know, people say I'm blessed and highly favored and things like that. Or they'll say, what's one of the things, you know, I'm, if you're saying that you're rich, sometimes people could look at you like you're lying, you know, but I'm going to say I'm going to go from my own experience. I'm going to use my best friend as an example. She was, I'll even go back a little bit further to my ex-husband. He was probably the first person that I would call a master manifester.
Okay.
He would drive us around on Sundays and we would go looking at these beautiful homes. And he would say, one day we're going to have a home like that. You know, he was speaking it into existence. And honestly, we would always go and see the visual of these homes. And then we even started going and viewing the homes. And I used to, I'm not going to lie, I came from a small town, people. So I felt like at first, like I'm not supposed to be in these homes. But from going in the homes and, you know, people, you'll have the realtor there and they'll show you these different homes and things like that. It let me know that, hey, I can be here. And then eventually we did get a bigger, beautiful home, you know,
several.
Several bigger, beautiful homes. Yes, there were, honestly, was several. I will say my best friend, she was the first person I remember her driving by a house. She just literally looked at a house on the street and she was like, T, that's my house. And I'm thinking, this girl is always lying. You know, why should she be stories up? And in my mind, I felt like she was lying, but it was like she said that she was going to have this home. And ladies and gentlemen, she did get that house. And then I remember, like 15 years old, she said that she wanted to have a relationship. She wanted to be a power couple, like Will and Jada. And we're 15, and Will and 15 or 16, somewhere in there. But Will and Jada was still in their new phase, loving each other. She's like, I want to be a power couple like that. I'm going to be a power couple like that. And now she has been on TV. She's written books and things like that. And she's all over social media. And then the only thing she did tell me, one day I'm going to live on an island. And no, she said she was going to own an island. But right now, people, she actually lives in Puerto Rico. And so I do believe that what you can have whatever it is that you can say. And if you don't get exactly what you say, you'll come comparable. You either, I always say God will give you comparable or better. And okay. In my experience from manifestation, you get comparable or better. Now, what I want to know from listeners are, do you believe in vision boards, the 369 method? Do you believe that you can speak things into existence? Because me, I've tried them all. Right now, I've been journaling. I do this 369 method where I journal. I've been doing this since January. And surprisingly, people, a lot of the things that I have written out have come to pass. And I will write it 3 times in the morning. I write it 6 times in the afternoon. And then 9 times in the evening. But I'm not going to lie. I might not be doing it right all the time. But I always make sure if I don't do it morning, noon, and night, I do it 3 times a day. And I might just kind of write them, I might write them all at once. But I find that I heard that 96% of what you write down will come to pass. Mm. And I'm going to tell you something.
Habakkuk 2:2, write the vision and make it plain, right?
And then that's the other thing that I was going to do. So I don't know what I'm doing that's working, because I do believe in when I write something, I write it in gratitude, because this is just what I've heard from spiritual teachers and even The Secret. You know, I've listened to The Secret and read the book and everything. And they say if you write things and you write it in a spirit of gratitude. So I always say, I'm thankful that I have X, Y, and Z. Okay. And then a lot of times I'll write down the date, because I like to go back and say, thank you, God, once it's complete. And I write the date down as well. But what I wanted to say, I lost my train of thought on that. But I wrote Habakkuk 2:2 at the bottom of what I write Habakkuk 2:2 and 3, what we're saying for the people that don't know is write the vision and make it plain. And those who read it, So I write that at the bottom as well. And I'm going to give you one example of something that I really know that God did for me. I took my real estate license. I was a realtor in Illinois, but then I came down here to Georgia and I took the real estate exam. But I was hearing, this is another thing, I was hearing bad information about the real estate exam in Georgia. So I kept putting it off out of fear. And people, don't let fear stop you from doing anything. But with that being said, I'm being fearful. I'm avoiding this test. And my sweetie was like, you're going to go take this test and you're going to pass it, right? So he's speaking life into me that day too. But I did study. But I don't know if because I was a realtor before, they gave me the hardest exam. But when I say when I got, honey, everything on that test was all like how they have the legal questions in there. But when I say it was like way more legal questions than there were basic real estate questions. So they give you just a little scrap piece of paper. And I wrote on that paper, I said, I am a realtor. I'm only taking this test one time. I'm leaving here as a realtor, and I have passed this exam. And I wrote Habakkuk 2:2 and 3. And I went, did I pass? Yes, I did. But I went and told my sweetie, I'm like, babe, God passed me, because I did study, but there was nothing on that exam that I studied for. And I walked out passing, and I just felt like a miracle had occurred. And he's like, no, babe, it's because you studied. I'm like, no, babe, it was God passed me, because I couldn't tell you nothing that was on that exam. And then For real. And then even with me getting the home that I have now, I looked at it online just like my best friend did. I looked at this house and I knew that this was my home. And most people, I think I have a, I like my community. Most people in my community had these nice homes with a finished basement, and they were already decorated and everything. And I had some family members go with me and look at some homes in this community. But the home that I chose did not have any paint in it. The basement wasn't finished. But in my heart, I felt like this was my home. And I remember recording myself saying, you know what, guys, I think that this is my home right here. And I hadn't been inside, but I saw the pictures online. But I could see myself in the house. I could see myself on the deck. And I had my mom, my realtor, and my youngest daughter. We all prayed inside of this home. And even though they were like, are you sure you want this one when there's all these other beautiful homes in the area? I'm like, no, this is my house. And the realtor ended up telling me they had 11 other offers, but the lady decided to choose mine. So I don't know if manifestation is something that you speak or if it's something that you write, but I do believe that manifestation is real. I don't know if it's the mindset that you have or if it's just positive thinking or if it's just faith or something that, you know, God just blesses you with from speaking life. Trina, what do you have to say about manifestation?
Like I said, it was just like I had a battle between, you know, the difference. But again, referring back to Habakkuk 2:2, it does state to write the vision and make it plain, right? And I have always vicariously lived through Danae, our bestie. Y'all know she's been on the show. We talked about her several times. She's always done that. And at the beginning of every year, she has this thing that she shares with us. And you write like what, over 300 things down or something like that, Tori, that she wants to accomplish for that year. And then as they become, as you've accomplished them, you just mark them out. And again, you thank God. So I always say that I'm going to do that and I start, but I never finish it. Right. So I need to be more consistent with actually following through with that plan. But watching her, she does. She speaks things into existence. You know, I had to watch my words and things that I say, because we should speak life and not death. Right. We should speak good things into our lives, into our environments, into our around our kids and everything. And I know that coming up with a single mother, you know, her struggles were those that I didn't have to encounter, but yet I still received her way of thinking because that's what I was taught, right? And sometimes in conversation, you can say something and then she'll say something negative and I'll be like, mom, don't be negative. And she'll be like, well, why am I being negative if that's the truth? So I kind of like always battle with, well, dang, she is right in all actuality. She is saying this is what's actually happening. So she's not lying, but should she reverse it and speak it the way that she wants to see it opposed to how it's actually unfolding? So I think was always a little bit confused about the difference, you know, because like if I say something to you, I don't want to come off like a liar. But at the same time, I know that everything I speak should be positive, should be inspirational, should be motivational to help not only myself, but others around me. So I think I've kind of battled with the difference. But having my prayer group that Tori came up with, having the prayer group helps me to be better. Having my husband helps me to be better when it comes to manifesting things, because he always says, like, if you're around him It could be raining, it could be a tornado outside, but his faith is so strong, he ain't gonna be moved. If the wind is blowing his face off, he's gonna be trying to hold on because he believes in what his God tells him, right? So if people come around him and they're negative, he's like, get that shit away from me. I don't want nothing to do with it. You're not gonna bleed that negativity into my spirit. So having him having y'all, it's kind of helped me to understand it a little bit more, but I still, in the back of my mind, have those negative thoughts that be like, am I lying or am I speaking it into existence? So my plan moving forward, all of 23 into 24, just trying to be on a more positive vibe and speak things as how I would want to see them opposed to how they are. I remember me and you having a conversation. This was probably a few years ago, way back. I was actually in LA at the time. So this was over 5 years ago. But I went to the doctor and I found out that my cholesterol was high. And I was like, cuz, they said, I'm one burger away from a stroke. You was like, I rebuke that in the name of Jesus. While I'm making a joke about it, your spirit is saying, don't put that out there. Even if you are joking about it, your words can make things happen. You know, you can speak things into existence, good and bad. So from that point on, I'm like, okay, I see what she's saying. Although my cholesterol is high, my cholesterol is amazing, God. Thank you, Lord, for good cholesterol being at the level where it's supposed to be, for me not having to take no medicine. I thank you for it all. And this is while I'm going through the trial. And to this day, I don't take no medicine for cholesterol, no, none of that. But just having that little conversation with Tori, she was like, I rebuke that. Don't even say that, even though I'm trying to crack a joke. She like, no, ma'am, you not putting that out in the atmosphere. And just turned it all around. And I don't have no high cholesterol.
I just saw something about that. There was actually a comedian who spoke that he was going to have a stroke, and he actually had a stroke. You know, he was saying it joking, but do you know that?
He just did a speech at Kevin Hart's Mark Twain Acceptance Award thingy. I forgot his name, but he's a black guy. And he even said, I joked about it before having a stroke or whatever. And like, look at me now. So see how you can say stuff jokingly, but to you, you're joking, but God is listening and he is absorbing and he is trying to pick up and put back out what you're speaking. So you got to be careful of how you talk, right?
Absolutely. But and the funny thing is, I always think back to you going to tour. I remember we were together and you were like, I got a feeling I'm going to get this job. It might have been around my 40th birthday. I can't remember what you were visiting, but you ended up getting the call. But you had that feeling first and you spoke it first. And then, you know, you ended up getting a call from them at that time. So that's what I thought you was going to bring up. But you actually spoke that into existence. But, you know, yeah. And with that being said, I mean, there's been countless times where you have feelings and you speak it into existence. But there's also the reason I rebuke certain things, because I believe that your word does form your world. So your word does form your world. So I have to watch what I say, because even before I got a divorce, I know a lot of my friends say that I spoke divorce into my life so many times before that. You know, I'm like, oh, I want a divorce. This is too much. I'm done. You know what I mean? So, and that happened. But not just that, but there's been a lot of times where things happen in my life and I'm like, ooh, I spoke that into my life. And that's why I am very careful about the things that I say, because I believe your words have power. But something about writing it down, I think that that's even more powerful. But with the goodness of God, I'm going to say that even if you're saying something negative, like you were saying, and Ruby was saying, well, it's the truth. You can live in your truth, or you can live in your faith. You know, most people are living in their truth, I want to live in my faith and walk to the world that I have framed for myself, for the goodness. And the beauty of God is that the good, you know, you can say negative things, but God is so good that for the most part, if you start speaking more positive things, the loving God that he is, the positive words are going to overpower the negative words. So yeah, a lot of people do to me. Yeah, you live in the reality that you created, the realness that you create, which is a mediocre life. Yeah. But if you want an even better life, hey, you speak it. Like, I'm speaking over my children right now because I'm going back and reading the Bible. Most of the time, it's the man in the house that blesses the children, but I'm the faith walker, faith talker in my house because I'm not married at the time, but I'm speaking blessing over my household as well, like they did in the Bible, saying you will be a nurse, you will graduate, you will live here, you do this. So am I lying? No. I mean, I'm just believing in faith that these things will happen to my child, or even on their, you know, when you put on their, in their context, let me get my words together. On my phone, in the context, yeah. I have my oldest daughter, my healthy, wealthy child. Mm-hmm. And then on my other child, I say my healthy, wealthy child that is a nurse, because she's in school to be a nurse. And it's difficult, but I'm like, hey, God brought you this far, and I will put her in remembrance of the steps that's taken her to get here. And he's just been so miraculous with some of the things that he's done in her life. That it's like, hey, he's going to take you all the way through. You will be a nurse. You will graduate from that nursing school, because there are people around her will try to feed her, like, and tell her, oh, this is hard. The nursing school is hard. It's like, you know what? People have a PhD, they have a master's degree, but you have a GOD. And that GOD will get you any and everywhere that you need to be. I say he will open doors for you that no man can close. So if you want to be a nurse, you want to graduate from here, you want to be a Delta, you will have what you say. But I just need you to believe with me. So I don't know if I'm lying. I don't believe that I'm lying. And most of the times, the things that I speak come to pass. Sometimes they're not, but in those situations, I'm like, hey, God will give you comparable or better. And most of the times when the things don't happen, it's because he had an even better plan for them in their lives and even in mine. So that's my take on manifestation.
And that sure was good, cousin. I mean, I know that word and our experience is definitely going to help one of our listeners, or even encourage them to put out any questions or comments that they have in regards to manifestation. What are their struggles? Or, you know, what have they seen in their upbringing with their family? So this was a great episode. Look at us, episode 15, finishing out season one, going hard.
Yes, we are going hard. And look, we are going harder. We are we coming back right in season two.
Yes.
And hopefully sometime in season two, if you want to become a podcaster, hopefully we'll be able to help you do this as well. So just stay with us. As Trina says, stay in the know. Follow us, what we're doing. And, you know, each one teach one. We are the type of sisters that like to help other people.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we thank you again for your time. And T, you want to go ahead and take us on out of here today?
Absolutely. Well, thank you for joining us on another episode of I'm Here For It, the podcast. Remember to hit that like and subscribe button on YouTube, TikTok, Facebook, and Instagram. And you can follow us on all the channels where you get your podcasts. We will be bringing you engaging topics every week. We are unscripted and highly addictive. So until next time, keep coming back for more. I'm here for it.
I'm here for it. Bye. Thank you guys for a good season one. Bye. Yes. Segment is sponsored by Tori Styles LLC, your source for inspirational-based products. Explore prayer books, journals, coffee mugs, stylish t-shirts, and customizable items for the small business owner. Visit www.toristyles.com.